Have you shown this to anyone?
No. If copies got out, it would be ridiculed by the online community. Son of Spock, the Dork Knight, I killed Kenny 6475.
Don't be afraid of them. Two of them are me.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
How many issues have you written?
Just 335, including the controversial number 289, featuring the death of Marmaduke.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, you raised an interesting sort of rhetorical question, I guess, because you've looked at this a lot more than I have, and you say that you think the afterlife is a lot different than what religion tells us. So what do you, you know, based on everything you've investigated, what do you think the afterlife is?
I think it's very fluid. I do think that first we go to a place that probably conforms to our expectations, personal, religious, spiritual, something that's probably very similar to what we've left behind as a way of transiting in various communications. And I've researched mediumistic communications. There's been concerted collection of those for well over a century now from psychical research. And they are very consistent in terms of descriptions, that first there is this kind of transition point, and then we start adjusting to an afterlife where we can take on any form that we want, i.e., most people will look their best. They'll pick a period in their life where they felt that they looked and felt their best. We begin to understand the power of thought and thought to manifest reality. And we discover that we have the ability to penetrate other realms. I think that some people do elect to stay close to the earth plane. They have interests in the earth plane or family members. And they may make themselves available for these mediumistic communications. But at some point, I think that we journey on and probably go into some other dimensions that are very inaccessible to us, maybe because we can't comprehend them. They're beyond the ability of our consciousness. I do believe in reincarnation. I'm not certain exactly what of us reincarnates, whether it's more of a Buddhist perspective in terms of our attributes and our spiritual and enlightened consciousness that goes on, or whether personality goes on, or both. There may be multitudes of parallel dimensions that our multidimensional self spins off into to have all sorts of experiences. And I don't necessarily think that they're all on Earth. I think that there are other worlds and other planes that the sum total of who we are has experiences. So I don't think that there's a finality to the afterlife. The idea of a static heaven or hell is, I disagree with that. I don't think that any supreme being sits in judgment of us. I think that there is some overarching consciousness that holds everything together, which we would call God or unconditional love or the all that is. But how much that cohesiveness plays in our individual paths, I don't think we really know.
It raises an interesting conundrum in a way, too, because if we ever did unlock the afterlife and what happens after you die, it may have a deleterious effect on all of us who are still here, in a way. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think a lot of the underpinnings of society are partially because fear of dying or the unknown of what happens after you die. So if it became known, you wonder how society would react.
I think that there's a potential for a lot of chaos. In fact, I think proof of the afterlife could be more destabilizing than the proverbial UFO on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us have become conditioned to the idea that at some point we're going to encounter alien life forms, not to diminish the impact of that by any means, but the idea of what happens to us after we die. Now, there's something that could undermine entire religions. People who feel that they've got to live a good life here in order to be rewarded in the afterlife. Well, what if the afterlife isn't like that?
Exactly.
Mediumistic communications support the idea that there is compensation, that the afterlife is compensatory. Then if you have elevated yourself and you've followed the righteous path, so to speak, that there is compensation for that in the afterlife, that you continue on. There don't seem to be very many perspectives of, like, the permanent hell, for example, and the people who go to the lower regions do have the ability for rehabilitation, but they do have to work themselves, you know, apply themselves to work themselves out of that. But our whole concepts of morals and ethics and what we must do in this life, a lot of it is contingent upon what our fears are of the afterlife.
Exactly. So to unlock that could be tremendously upsetting. That would really upset the apple cart, I think, in a big way. But it would be interesting to see it play out. Yep.
It could, Tim. One of the things that's been very interesting in doing the research with George on this book is the people who have felt that they had some sort of breakthrough evidence in the past of proof of the afterlife. You know, they've taken their evidence out, they've had press conferences, they've done demonstrations, and naturally they're met with some criticism and ridicule. That's to be expected. But what all of them did not expect was apathy. They had, all these researchers had visions of ushering humanity into a new brotherhood of love and light because the riddle of the afterlife would be solved.
Yeah.
And what they're met with is a collective yawn. And I don't think it's like nobody cares. I think that this is another playing out of our fear, that people say they want to know that there's survival after death, and that they want to know that they carry on in some way, but they're afraid to know exactly how.
Interesting that it would be met with apathy, but I think you have to couple that too with just the general marginalization of the paranormal, where people don't believe people who are in the paranormal. Like, if it was a scientist who came out with the information, maybe it would be seen differently, I guess. I don't know.
That's true, and in fact, science has been very opposed to a lot of spirit communications research, even more so than organized religion. There have been, you know, some components of religion that have championed the idea of spirit communications, but I would like to add, with the expectation that the information in the afterlife is going to validate the religion. And we simply don't have that guarantee. Our religions are powerful. They are more powerful than governments. And going up against those beliefs is very serious business. So I think that we probably stand the most to gain and lose in the area of spirit communication. In science, it's very hard now to pursue any serious research. We had, from about the late 1800s, we had the field of psychical research, where people with academic and scientific backgrounds studied mediums, and then that evolved into parapsychology with laboratory work mainly oriented towards demonstrating psi, like ESP and telepathy, and also PK, psychokinesis, mind over matter. But in today's climate, it's very difficult for anyone with a science background to get any serious interest, support, or funding in studies of mediumship and spirit communications. It's just quite dismissed as fringe and unimportant.
And something that I was kind of angling around earlier when I was asking you the question, given what we know about what the government looked at as far as remote viewing and that kind of stuff, do you think that there are answers out there, but they've been held back by people who figured them out inside the government or whatever, that kind of thing?
I can't help but think that. And I'm not much on the conspiracy end of things. I really haven't gotten involved in that. But I can't help but think that somebody or some institutions know more than they're telling. And this may be because of fears of, acculturation, the disintegrating impact, the chaotic impact that some things could have on society as a whole. Our reality is set to structure and order, and We have religions, governments, and institutions that maintain that order. And so if you inject information that upsets the order, it's difficult to predict, you know, the fallout from that.
Yeah, like we said here about the whole life after death thing, if it was, you know, if the government figured out that what happens after you die and everything, they, you know, why would they want to tell anybody? They wouldn't pay any taxes, they wouldn't go to work anymore, and all this other stuff. So it's like, it wouldn't make any sense to tell anybody. Now, as somebody who's been doing this for almost 30 years, let's say, you know, you're talking to somebody who just got into this, who's interested in the phenomenon, paranormal, you know, sphere. What kind of advice would you give, I guess you could say, to newcomers to the field of the paranormal? What should they do to, you know, better educate themselves and to really sort of, you know, begin the path, if you will?
Two things. One is to cultivate and maintain a daily spiritual practice of meditation and or prayer, but especially meditation. And the reason for this is that it expands consciousness. It sharpens the intuition and the psychic faculty. It connects you to something that's higher than you, a sense of something that's higher than you and forces that are higher or beyond you, but it's grounding at the same time. And work in the paranormal, to be effective in the paranormal, you must be grounded. That's like the underpinning. I think that work in the paranormal, whether you're in ufology, ghost hunting, Bigfoot hunting, if you go deep enough and stay in it long enough, you will wind up on the path of the mystic, and that is the truth. You wind up contemplating and pursuing the same big spiritual questions that have formed all of our mystical traditions. The paranormal will lead you straight there. Unless, of course, you get caught up in hamster wheel ghost hunting, and then you go nowhere. And the other is to be as broad-based as possible in your study. It's perfectly fine to have an area that you want to go into very intensely, but try to educate yourself in all of these things so that you have some context to put them in. There are so many people out there who have focused in such narrow areas that they have no context to compare their field to. And that's like having tunnel vision. I'm very thankful that because of my own curiosity, I elected not to specialize in any one field, but to become involved in some way in all of it. And of course you can't be in everything all the time, but I think it's a good idea to have a working knowledge of as much as possible. And to get out and do some hands-on things, to go out on field trips, to go to the conferences, be in dialogue on the internet, to be you know, constantly searching for new perspectives and information, and to be as open-minded as possible.
Absolutely, yeah. As we've been preaching on this program for a very long time, that you really got to be multidisciplined to get a handle on this whole thing, because there's just too much overlapping of these things to for them not to be related.
And otherwise, you know, how can you possibly evaluate what you've experienced, or if you're investigating what someone else has reported experiencing, if you haven't got a broad base of knowledge to draw upon?
I take it you're probably not a big 2012-er, but where do you see things headed as we, you know, move further into this new decade?
You know, I think we're still going to be here in 2012, mm-hmm. And I know that there are some scenarios out there that are looking very unsettling, that the sun itself is going to be determining a lot of what happens on this planet with solar flare activity and things like that. It's inevitable that the sun will die at some point and take the Earth with it, and probably most everything else in the solar system. Whether or not that happens far in the future or in the near future, I don't think we know. But I'm not a doomsday person.
Yeah.
I've tended to not get too involved in doomsday scenarios, because as soon as one doomsday has passed and we're still here, another one crops up and everybody gets reoriented toward that. And I also don't think it's a good idea to encourage the collective thought of the people on this planet toward disaster, because it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think that we don't have much of a clue of the impact of the manifestation power of our thought. If we did, we would think and act much differently. And when you get a global mindset going of people oriented toward destruction and disaster, it can't help but have a physical impact on the things that happen on this planet.
Exactly, yeah. So if everybody's expecting doomsday on 2012, it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy just because it manifests itself. The one area we haven't really gotten into, in a sense, is just the UFO phenomenon in general. Obviously, you're interested in these interdimensional entities. Now, do you think that could be ascribed to most of the UFO phenomenon, or do you think there is sort of like, you know, the classic UFO thing is still going on, in the sense that it's aliens from another planet, straight up, you know, as the old school UFO guys say?
I think that we're probably experiencing both. The idea that entities from another world with sufficiently advanced technology to, you know, get around the distance question, probably through wormholes, makes a lot of sense to me. And that we may indeed have been or are being visited by such entities. I think the bulk of our contact experiences that we explain and define as extraterrestrial are interdimensional, that they're beings from dimensions which are part of our universe and just very close to us that we can't quite see around the bend in space, so to speak.
That seems to be the one theory, I guess you could say, that's becoming more and more in vogue over the years, because it just lends itself to reason that this thing seems too complex. It has to be something beyond just people from another planet, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you've been in this for 30 years. Do you think, well, as far as the UFO phenomenon goes, you know, there's this element to ufology that is pushing and pushing and pushing for disclosure. Do you think that sort of thing will ever happen, or do you think the government's as flummoxed by the UFO phenomenon as you and I are?
Part of me thinks that the government, so to speak, the entity we call a government, may not know as much as we think we know. Personally, I think it's very hard to sit on big secrets. And if enough people know the secret, sooner or later it comes out in some way. On the other hand, it's quite likely that there is a suppression of at least some information. But I do get a little weary every year of the buildup for the October surprise. And, you know, we're always just on the edge of some big disclosure that never seems to materialize, which in and of itself is rather trickster-like. So I think I believe a little of both, that there are probably a lot of things that the general public are not being told. But at the same time, is the government sitting on, you know, the granddaddy of them all in terms of revelations? Seems to me pretty hard to keep that under wraps for so long.
Yeah, that would seem to be the case. You wonder what really is going on and if we'll ever find out. So it'll be interesting to see how things unfold as the years go by. So obviously you're working on the Jinn book. When can people expect that to be available to get their hands on?
The Jinn book will be published in March. It's actually finished and in production now. We're still wrapping up portals. We're very close to being done on that. That will be out about a year from now. Phil has just this summer come out with a book called Files from the Edge about some of the stranger interdimensional things from his own case files. And he has another book on contact coming out at the end of this year. I have several books coming out. I have a new book on fairies coming out in September. After the Jinn book, I have a book on the Ouija board.
Oh, wow.
I take a look with another paranormal investigator, Rick Fisher, on the pros and cons of the Ouija board. And a short take on that, my feeling is it's a tool. It's neutral in and of itself, but yet at the same time, the majority of people who use it do seem to have negative experiences, and so we're looking at why is that? Are we projecting something onto this device that is coming more from us
makes you wonder. You don't hear too many positive Ouija board stories. But,
well, not in modern times. If you go back far enough in the board's a little over 100-year history, it's quite a different story. We may want to explore that in a whole different show. And then, of course, I have the Spirit Communications book with George coming out next year, too.
Wow. How do you find the time to write all these books, Rosemary? I mean, geez, there's only so much time in the day.
I must have doppelgangers who work for me at night. Well, I'm blessed with being a fast writer. I don't have to revise a lot. It seems to come out, you know, in very organized fashion. And because I specialize in the paranormal, I don't have to reinvent the wheel on every book because all of my research sort of folds into yet another project. So
yeah.
Any one project I start, I have a leg up being able to draw on a lot of previous works and my own extensive library of several thousand books.
Yikes. You're making me jealous here. I think my library only has about 200 books, so I'll have to catch up with you eventually. Okay, well, we sort of touched on the books that are coming up soon, and what about speaking engagements? Where can people see you live and in person in the next few, you know, weeks and months?
I will be at the Dragon Con. I do Dragon Con now every year. This will be my fourth year at Dragon Con on the paranormal and dark fantasy track. I'll be doing some things with John Zappas there. Looking forward to that very much. The Mothman Festival in September, the Mid-Ohio Valley Paranormal Conference in Parkersburg, West Virginia in September. And October, I'm out on the college circuit.
Nice, nice.
A lot of lecturing. And, of course, next year I already have paranormal conferences committed, Phenomenology 103 in Gettysburg, Haunted America, East Coast in San Diego in February, Midwest in June, and Cape Cod again probably in September next year. So, you know, things keep me busy. I'm on the move a lot.
Yeah, it sounds that way. It must be cool to get to travel all over the country and see these places and meet these people that are interested in this strange phenomena.
It is exciting research, and I really love what I do. I'm fascinated by the paranormal. I want my work to make some contribution to our understanding of what's going on. And we may not find those big answers in our generation, so to speak, or the next 30 or 40 years, whatever, but we can make contributions toward our understanding of what our reality is and what else is out there that we are interacting with.
Yeah, well, you make a good point, too, earlier when I asked you about why we haven't gotten to the answers yet. But if you look at the history of humankind, you know, at least we're looking now and documenting this and have established a quasi-science, if you will, of the paranormal, which is, you know, a far cry from hundreds of years ago when it was still just generally mysterious and people really didn't have that collective field, if you will. So, you know, we're making progress, and hopefully the next generation can come along and start unlocking these secrets.
We are fortunate to live in this intellectual climate. Even though we have institutions and factions of society that criticize or ridicule the paranormal, we are still free to pursue the research, and that, as you just pointed out, Tim, has not always been the case.
Absolutely. Well, Rosemary, we're at the end of our allotted time here, and I want to thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate all the insight you've given me here on not just your research, but your amazing career in the world of the paranormal. I'm just really amazed by it and have just a huge amount of respect for you for the sheer breadth of areas you've covered and the seriousness you've given all the different genres. We need more people like you in the field who are examining all the different stuff and trying to connect the dots. And the sooner we start drawing those lines, I have a feeling the sooner we'll get to the bottom of these mysteries. And someday we'll look back and definitely people will owe a great debt to you for helping to draw those lines between the dots. And it's been a thrill to have you on the program. Obviously, we'll definitely have you back on the show in the future. to cover a whole host of different topics as well. So thank you once again for coming on with All of America Audio.
And thank you, Tim. It's been great talking with you about these things. I mean, you asked some really good questions. I think we got into a lot of very interesting areas and in some depth, too.
That does it for the Rosemary Ellen Guiley portion of this week's edition of BOA Audio. Big, big, super huge thanks, of course, to Rosemary for coming on the show. Be sure to check out her website, www.visionaryliving.com. Pretty simple, all one word, visionaryliving.com. Check it out. But wait, there's more before you shut off the program for those folks who just can't stand listening to the end of the show. I know you're out there. I shake my fist like Grandpa Simpson at you folks out there, but I understand. But don't go anywhere just yet, because we've got a special pop-in here from good friend of the program and double speaker at the Exeter UFO Festival, Peter Robbins. I've already plugged the bejesus out of the big event this weekend, but now let's turn it over to Peter Robbins here, as he will really provide an in-depth preview of the festivities in Exeter, as well as reflect on the recent Roswell UFO Festival. As I said at the beginning of the show, folks, if you can't attend the Exeter UFO Festival, you definitely still want to stick around here and listen to the conversation between me and Peter, because I had a lot of fun catching up with him and talking about UFO festivals in general. So without any further ado, let's roll you into the next part of this week's edition of BOA Audio. Peter Robbins returns to the program to preview the Exeter UFO Festival. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a special guest here popping in at the end of the program for a little discussion on a previous event of this summer and a big event that's coming up. It's our good friend Peter Robbins. He's back here on the program. He was on earlier this year back in January talking about his paper on exopolitics, disclosure, all that stuff. But now we're talking about the festival scene and a couple of big festivals, as I said, one that's already happened and one that's coming up. So welcome back to the show, Peter. It's great to talk to you again.
Hi, Tim, and it's wonderful to be back on.
And as I teased here, of course, you were intimately involved with the Roswell UFO Festival back in July 4th weekend, and we've got the big Exeter UFO Festival coming up on September 4th in Exeter, New Hampshire, and I'll be a part of that as the MC. And, of course, you'll be not only doing a presentation of your own, but also doing a separate presentation via Dean Merchant's research. So you got quite a busy plate there on September 4th.
Yes, indeed. As you know, for the past 4 years, I've worked for the city of Roswell, New Mexico, as a consultant and advisor on building responsible UFO tourism, and also as a coordinator of their yearly conference or symposium. And this year's, I would have to rate as a tremendous success. The symposium was one of the best I've ever been associated with. It ran for 2 full days. It had a tremendous roster of speakers, and one of the things I'm proudest of is that absolutely every presenter, from myself to Rich Dolan, my gosh, it was quite a pantheon of speakers that we had, all addressed Roswell from differing points of view, the historic, the scientific, the cultural impact that it's had on the world at large. And this, of course, was part of a larger 4-day festival. The world of UFO festivals is fairly elite at this point. There are only 3 of them, and they are all associated with municipalities in the United States that can claim righteously to have had highly significant UFO events in their past. Mm-hmm. Some of my colleagues have differed with me on their attitudes toward anything with the word festival in it that aligns itself with the subject of UFOs. As one friend whose name every one of your listeners probably knows if they follow the UFO scene said to me some time back, the subject of UFOs is simply too serious to be allowed to be dealt with in a, quote, festival atmosphere. And I felt that way, Tim, myself, until 2003, when myself along with Stan Friedman had been invited to speak for the McMinnville, Oregon UFO Festival and Conference. McMinnville, of course, an important 1950 event, which resulted in several of the finest unqualified authentic UFO photographs ever taken. McMinnville in May completed its 11th annual UFO Festival, and many folks don't realize that Oregon, which is known for being a very progressive state in the best sense of the word, is probably the third or fourth most economically strapped state in the Union right now, and that's saying a lot given the bad economic times we're in. Mm. The reason for that is because they're completely associated their economy with the timber industry, and housing starts are flat. I bring in this non-UFO-related information because it's become important to me personally, where I'm able to work with a town, a city, or a village that wants to build its economy by building UFO-related tourism, where appropriate, in a responsible way, and to educate people while we entertain them. And Roswell, I guess, is emblematic of that, as is certainly McMinnville at this point. There are a lot of kid-friendly things, a lot of family activities. A lot of it is just good, even silly, fun. But in each one of these three annual events, there is a serious conference. And I have no problem with that schizophrenia that, festivals elicit in terms of doing, you know, as long as it's not mean-spirited or mocking, and none of these events are. In that sense, I think Roswell was a great success. We drew over 10,000 people.
Oh, wow.
And had a film festival and contests and bands, concerts straight through that 4 days, the tab very heavily underwritten by the city. In going into Exeter, we're dealing with a festival in its infancy in a beautiful small town in New Hampshire. I think one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. And Lord knows New England is up against the wall right now financially. If the Exeter Conference over the next years can become an annual event and help build traffic to their community year-round, and at the same time, on a yearly basis, help to educate folks in the area and visitors from all over the place about the deadly seriousness of this subject. As a footnote, Tim, the reason that Exeter is not nearly as well known as it should be has to do with the fact that the very first sightings that constitute the 1965, September 65 incident at Exeter, the object in question was seen by military personnel at Pease Air Force Base. And the next day, when the media started contacting the base as a source of responsible information to confirm the civilian reports that were coming out and the police reports that were coming out, they flat out denied it, and the media bought it. And so the subject was easier to subdue and hide and get lost in the mists of time, although now we know how real it actually was.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's commendable, I think, that you're the one who's sort of spearheading this grassroots community adoption of their UFO history, because, you know, I know your heart and your mind is in the right place. You're not somebody who's coming into town saying, hey, listen, we can make a lot of money off of this, so let's adopt UFOs. Yeah. So, I mean, you're the guy we need doing this kind of stuff, so it's good
stuff. Thank you, brother. The fact is, of course, as you and I know all too well, by looking at our income tax every year, this is a terrible way to make a living.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and one of the things that I absolutely love about the chartering of this incident last year is our plan is, as we are able to actually make money in this community for this community, all profits beyond expenses, beyond what individual merchants may make on that weekend with a lot of visitors, all profits will be donated every year to various child services in New Hampshire. And it doesn't get much more honorable or better than that, or it's also, as a byproduct, a way of shutting up the total debunkers who, you know, will point to the financial gain that folks like you and I are realizing, it's nonsensical. And in fact, I'm doing this job for no money at all because I believe in it and because I'm not a very practical person.
Yeah. Well, I'm not getting paid to host the event either. So, I mean, you just throw in what you can to help out it. I mean, the opportunity to be a part of it. And as you said, Exeter is just, you don't want to leave once you get up there. It's that nice. It's just,
oh my gosh, it really is. And, you know, we built a terrific one-day conference and entertainment program for the day. And it's certainly worth our while to take a minute or two to review it. Our leading draw, of course, is the beyond legendary Stanton T. Friedman, arguably, along with Bud Hopkins, the most famous presence in the world of UFO research and investigation in the world, bar none. And Stan, bless his heart, is going to be there as our keynote speaker. Steve Firmani, who is the director of New England MUFON and working very hard behind the scenes to help make this event a success, will also be speaking on MUFON's work in the area. And he is not just the state section director, he is New England section mm-hmm. director. I'll be, you mentioned our friend Dean Merchant and the fact that I'll be giving a talk for him. Dean's health makes it a problem for him to actually do this, and I did this for the very first time in my life, that is, present another person's paper, while I was in the position that you're going to be next month, basically emceeing the Roswell UFO Symposium. And Dean, bless his heart, has done a remarkable job of researching an area of study that's kind of fallen between the cracks. Most folks, even in the field, don't realize that when the 509th Atomic Bomb Wing, famous for the fact that in the summer of 1947, they were the only nuclear strike force in the world, and they were stationed out at the old Roswell Army Airfield. Hence, they became involved in the story immediately. When they were transferred, the unit was transferred out of Roswell, they were transferred across the country to the Pease Air Force Base in New Hampshire, forming, in a way, the second part of the nuclear component of what's now called the nuclear triangle. The first aspect is the nearby shipyards, which specialize now in nuclear submarine work, and now the big nuclear power plant, all very close together. But when they transferred across the United States in 58, UFO activity followed. And what Dean has done a yeoman's job of in his research is bringing to the fore connections between the 509th and UFOs, the incident at Exeter in 1965, the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case, not far from where we'll be having our festival and conference in 61, and the original Roswell incident. And I'll tell you what, you know, you're going to hear the talk in a couple of weeks, but it quite blew my mind. And Dean was also kind enough to let me do a certain amount of rewriting to make the paper expressible in spoken terms rather than written terms. It is something of a different. We'll also be opening for business and having our first installation of a member in the newly chartered Exeter UFO Hall of Fame. And I think that's going to be a particularly moving event because the key first most famous eyewitness, Norman Muscadero, will be honored, and I believe it's his brother and his son who will be accepting the award in his memory. I'm also delighted to announce that we have an old colleague of mine I haven't seen in some years, Phil Imbrovno, who has been a major quiet, methodical, scientific UFO researcher in New England going back for many years, and also one of the great scholars on one of my favorite mysteries in North America, a perfectly preserved, I think just post-Neolithic, enclave of activity and structures and standing stones and monuments called America's Stonehenge, which also is not that far from the site of these events. I'm going to be giving a talk on a very personal reflection and reevaluation on Russia's best-known close encounter of the third kind, the so-called Voronezh incident of 1989. And it's personal to me, partly with my background as an American of Russian descent, but also early on, having linked up and become friends with a local Voronezh scientific investigator on the ground then. And my paper will draw from our correspondence as well as the research that I've put together. So the speakers lineup, and we may even have one other, we're not sure, will be very full. And from there, the kids' activities and the family-friendly stuff will take place all over town. Again, why should you come? If you can come out of your way and enjoy this beautiful part of the United States at a perfect time of year, we would love to have you there. I'm delighted that if the attendance is anything like last year, it will be overwhelmingly folks who are not, like you and me, obsessed with this subject, regular pragmatic New Englanders with open minds and good skeptical sense of inquiry. All of the presentations will be absolutely free of charge, as will the other events. The local merchants, restaurants, fraternal organizations are turning out to support this event in every way that they can. But if you are intellectually curious, if you want to have a wonderful day or weekend in a beautiful part of the States, if you want to have an opportunity to hear some extremely compelling presentations by very qualified speakers, get up close and personal with them, pick up some books, hang out, and the day will end with an absolutely wonderful band performance, concert, dance, whatever you want to call it, in the old town hall. And as you know, Tim, even if you don't care about UFOs, if you care about American history, come and see this town hall. It's drop-dead gorgeous, Civil War era, three-sided balcony like an old Quaker meeting house. It's I'm a history buff, so for me these things really matter. But come, support this event, help this community, educate yourself, have a good time, meet me, meet Tim, Stan, Phil, Kathy Martin will be there, bless her heart. Kathy, of course, is one of our greatest assets in ufology. She's co-author of Stanton Friedman of the book Captured about the Hill abduction case, and she is the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. She will be behind the scenes, available to chat with. She's helping out as an organizer, and we're so happy that she's going to be part of this as well.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And the point that you made that I just want to even emphasize again, folks, is that this is free. This is a free event. I mean, to see Peter Robbins, Phil Imbrogno, and Stan Friedman for free is just an amazing opportunity for people in the New England area and beyond who can make the trip. You know, at some conferences, you might have to shell out $50 to see that kind of lineup, you know?
At least. And I am just so proud to be involved with this event, because I think in these ways of creating an event, helping to create an event that will go on. You live beyond yourself. You contribute to the public knowledge. You give people an opportunity, again, to educate themselves while they have a good time. And what can we say besides this? It doesn't get much better. Join us if you possibly can. If you have any questions about the event, you can go right to our information website, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's Exeter, that's E-X-E-T-E-R, UFOfestival.net, and you'll get all the latest comings and goings, information on anything that you'd need if you're planning on coming or just interested in looking into joining us the first weekend of September.
You almost got it. It's ExeterUFOFestival.com.
Well, there we go. Thank you. That is a big difference. To quote my favorite author. The difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between the lightning bug and the lightning. Thank you.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. And this town, I mean, I can't put it over enough. It's just an amazing place. It's like stepping into the 1950s. You really get a feel for what it was like back then. And
yeah,
I mean, right on Main Street, there's like a toy store. And it's not like a Toys R Us or a KB. It's like John Smith's toy store. And it's, you know, they probably have hobby horses in there and all kinds of fun stuff.
You know, we should also add, for readers of popular fiction, especially those of us that are hooked on conspiratorial ideas which are rooted possibly in history, a little no-name writer named Dan Brown lived in that community when he wrote a book that maybe one or two of you have heard of called The Da Vinci Code. And there is a local bookstore there above which he was living at the time. And if you're like me and a book maniac and bibliophile and manic book collector as well as avid reader, that may be your one chance to pick up a signed book by Dan Brown, who keeps an affiliation with this bookstore. So there's any number of reasons, plus the surrounding area is jaw-droppingly beautiful. You can take your own UFO tours. We're working right now on a guided tour of the area that would cover the incident at Exeter and the Hills event, but there'll be plenty to do, plenty of nice folks to speak with. Everything is modestly priced by the standards that I know I'm used to, whether it's a meal or a hotel room or, you know, whatever else you're planning on doing. So please come. And if you're listening now and you do decide to show up, introduce yourself to me and to Tim, and we will introduce you to Stan and make sure that you have as much fun as humanly possible within the law.
Yes, yes, exactly. We're bound by the law, though, folks. So
yes, absolutely.
And yeah, Peter alluded to it, and I just want to sort of mention too that, you know, for a lot of these events, it's so serious and it's so into UFOs that it's like you know you don't want to bring your kids to this unless they're into this. But yeah, like listen to some of the stuff they have for kids at the festival. There's going to be buckets of chalk around town, so little kids can, you know, draw UFO drawings and stuff on the sidewalk, beach rock painting, face painting, a debris field thing that's been constructed by the kids in town, UFO construction contest, costume contest, alien pet costume contest, children's ET costume contest, and as Peter said, an Earthlings and Aliens ball to sort of end the night with New England's famous band, the Morlocks.
For a fact, as a devotee of classic rock, the band that is going to be playing, I think they're called the Warlocks, I forget, but I heard them last year, and they were rocking. We had a great time and really banged those beams around in the Old Town Hall, a very nice way to neutralize the serious effects of earlier in the day.
That's for sure, yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you're bumming around here at the end of the summer and you're kind of wondering what to do with the kids, you know, this is the perfect opportunity. You know, your kids can have some fun. You can learn about the UFO subject and meet some of these people and meet some of these big names. I mean, just like I said, to see Stan and Peter and Phil for free and to get a chance to meet them and stuff is just such an enormously awesome opportunity that I'm really proud to be a part of and proud to have a hand in trying to get
this. We're really happy to have you on this, Tim, really and truly. Without your work here, I'm just not sure how well we'd be able to promote it, and for us, it'll just be a chance to get together and have some fun again as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to reconnecting with you again. It's going to be awesome. So,
yeah.
I think that just about does it. The website, once again, is ExeterUFOFestival.com. It's all over in all of America as well for folks who go to the website. And let me spell that once more. Exeter, E-X-E-T-E-R. UFOFestival.com. All the information's there. Totally free event and awesome speakers, lots of fun for the family as well, and just the perfect opportunity for people. So you definitely want to check it out if you're within driving distance or you want to make the trip, for sure.
Beautiful, Tim.
And let me thank you once again for coming back on the show for this pop-in, Peter. I'll see you in a few short weeks, and I'll be talking to you, of course, as the event gets closer. But it's great to have you back to talk to the BOA audio listeners.
A pleasure, Tim, and let's do this again when the weather cools down.
Absolutely.
Okay, brother.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 5 in total. Want to give big, big, super huge thanks, of course, to Peter Robbins for coming on here at the end of the program to pop in and preview the big event in Exeter this weekend. If you want to find out more about that, of course, check out www.exeterufofestival.com, EXETERUFOFestival.com. Hope to see a whole slew of BOA Audio listeners at the big event. And, of course, once again, big, big, super huge thanks to Rosemary Ellen Guiley for coming on the show and appearing as our big guest here on the program this week. You can find out more about her work at visionaryliving.com. Pretty simple, all one word, visionaryliving.com. Check it out. Before we dive into the BOA Audio listener feedback for the final time this year, I want to take a moment and offer a heartfelt congratulations to BOA's own Marla Pena and her husband Enrique on the birth of their son, Alan Mena. It is truly a joyous occasion, and in addition to the heartfelt and encouraging emails I get from folks listening to BOA Audio and supporting this website, it's moments like this that make this at times difficult gig of running the BOA franchise so worthwhile. So once again, congrats to Marla and Enrique. Welcome to the world, Alan Mena. May you see things that we could only imagine. May you live in a world beyond our wildest dreams. And of course, may you stay forever young. And now let's move on into the final edition of BOA Audio Listener Feedback here for Season 5. And since it is our last chance to hear from the awesome BOA listeners, I really wanted to go hog wild on this one. So we've got four emails running the gamut of different stuff. So let's just dive in and get cooking on these. The first email comes from Jim, no hometown listed, and here's what he has to say. Just listened to your most excellent interview with Bruce Maccabee. The quality of experts and witnesses you present is exceptional. Just a few possible suggestions for future interviews. Colby Landrum and or the doctor who treated Betty Cash for her injuries. It seems as if the original medical records for the family, which may have mysteriously disappeared, would represent powerful evidence in the Cash-Landrum case. Number 2. Fighter pilots scrambled to intercept UFOs. The Iranian Air Force pilot involved in the Tehran incident is the only one who comes to mind. Number 3. Nick Cook of Hunt for Zero Point. He seems a credible source who flashed brightly across the screen and then vanished, so to speak. By the way, thanks for the program featuring Smiles Lewis. I know Smiles in passing. He's an interesting guy. Thanks again, Jim. Well, thank you for writing in, Jim. I'm glad you enjoyed our interview with the legendary Bruce Maccabee. And thank you for sending in your guest suggestions. You've really issued a challenge to me here with the first two, Colby Landrum, as well as fighter pilots scrambled to intercept UFOs. But I will put both concepts on the drawing board for Season 6 and see what I can come up with. As far as Nick Cook goes, I think I read his book a while ago when I first got into the esoteric, and he's definitely somebody who'd be interesting to speak to on the program, so I will put him on the list as well for potential guests in Season 6. For those folks who may have missed last week's edition of the program, the reason Jim's sending in some suggestions here is because we put the call out at the end of last week's program, as we do at the end of every season. We want to hear your guest suggestions and topic suggestions for Season 6. A healthy portion of the guests featured each season are the result of suggestions from BOA Audio listeners, and I always hearken back to the now beloved Bruce Rux trilogy, which stemmed entirely from a suggestion from a BOA Audio listener. So there's always some gold in there amongst these suggestions. And I want to hear what you folks want to hear on the program, whether it's guests, topics, or just more of this, less of that. I'm interested in all that stuff. So send me your feedback and help shape BOA Audio Season 6 as we get ready to start the pre-production stage of the next era of BOA Audio. Second email is short and sweet, and it comes from Christopher, no hometown listed, and here's what he has to say. How do you download the MP3 segments? Thanks. This is an email I've been getting for a while from people lately, and it's time I address this issue. I didn't want to really say anything until I got things straightened out, but for now, the half-show MP3s for all episodes prior to this summer are offline, and that is due to an issue with our web host. I can't really say too much more about it. It's just a technical thing. We kind of overloaded their traffic, so they shut down the half-show MP3s. We're still working on a solution to that, but for now, your best bet is to just grab the full-show MP3s if you can. I apologize to folks with dial-up, but I'm going to do my best to find a solution to this between the seasons. Sorry to disappoint you, Christopher. There is no specific solution to that right now, but stay tuned and hopefully we'll get it straightened out by the time Season 6 kicks up. Next email comes from Shannon in Taylor, Michigan. Here's what she has to say. I just recently discovered your podcast, and I have to say it is by far one of the best of its kind. I've enjoyed almost every episode I've heard. If for some reason I didn't, it was mostly because of the particular subject, which just bored me, or I thought the guest was a boring nut job. It has never been because of your hosting ability. My faves so far have been the Amish show and the comic book episodes. I found them to be far more interesting than I would have ever thought, hence why I enjoyed them so much. I hope you do more shows outside of the paranormal realm about cool stuff from time to time. Thank you very much for all the hard work you do. Your show is a true gem in a sometimes muddy field. Shannon in Taylor, Michigan. Thank you for writing in, Shannon. I really enjoyed your email specifically because you mentioned one of my favorite episodes that barely ever gets mentioned, and that's the Amish episode. Loved that one, and I barely heard anything about it from the BOA audio listeners. And you raise an interesting point, kind of like what we heard from one of the emailers last week. They don't like us doing the pop culture stuff. You like us doing some of the more peripheral stuff. So we turn it over to the BOA audio listeners once again here at the end of the program. What kind of stuff do you want to hear in Season 6? Do you want to hear more peripheral stuff? Do you want to hear weird stuff that sort of is paranormal or it is esoteric, but it's not one of the dead horses that get beaten continuously on paranormal radio, talking about UFOs, conspiracy theory, and all the staples of esoterica? I can almost guarantee we'll definitely be exploring a lot of the tangential, paranormal, and quasi-paranormal areas in Season 6, but there's always areas that I never even would have considered. As Shannon points out, the comic book episodes, that's another one that came from the minds of BOA Audio listeners. So I don't want to beat a dead horse of my own here, and thus I'll just leave it at that. Send me your thoughts on topics you want to hear, especially topics outside of the main pillars of esoterica, because I'm interested in hearing what you would like to hear on the program. And now the final email of BOA Audio Season 5, and it is a heartwarming one for me personally, and it is truly a humbling one as well. It comes from Afghan Bob in Camp Stone, Herat, Afghanistan. I listened to your latest podcast last night and really enjoyed it, as well as the others I've listened to. I'm a Department of Defense contractor working in Camp Stone, Herat, Afghanistan. This is on the west side of the country, about 40 miles from Iran. I retired from the U.S. Army as a lieutenant colonel in 1998. I volunteered to return to active duty in 2006 for a couple years and served in Afghanistan at my own request in 2007. I returned as a contractor in 2009 and will finish up here in December 2010, giving me 3 years in Afghanistan. I bought the Ruppelt book and others as a boy in the early 1960s. I've had a couple of personal sightings in New Jersey where I grew up. One was soon identified as a blimp with a rolling electric light message display after I reported it to the police. They pretty much laughed it off. The second sighting might have been high-flying birds or not. They were white spots in the sky doing typical UFO maneuvering beyond the physical means of our aircraft. Anyway, I found your website a couple of months ago when my interest in UFOs resurfaced and have recently been researching what I can find on the internet. The only problem I have is that the internet service here is very slow when it is working. A good average is a download of 10 kilobytes a second. Anyway, I've donated to your site and will be a continued listener and reader. I wish I found it sooner. Keep up your enthusiasm and your highly professional work. Afghan Bob at Camp Stone, Herat, Afghanistan. I got this email a couple of days ago, and I knew it had to be the final email here of Season 5. We've beaten the drum week in and week out for international listeners, and then you get an email like this, and it just blows your mind. Camp Stone, Herat, Afghanistan. It is just humbling to know that in our own little way, we're helping somebody get through their time over there in Afghanistan. And, you know, we're giving Afghan Bob a moment away from the conflict. And that, to me, is just tremendously humbling and brings it all back around to why I do this program. And that is for the entertainment and enjoyment and enlightenment of folks all around the world. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I was really just blown away by this and taken aback and left without words here. I wish I could do more about the download speed of the program. Maybe sometime in the future we can set up some kind of smaller MP3 size for dial-up folks. You know, definitely something I'll look into in the future. I want to thank Afghan Bob for writing in. Really making my day, making my summer, and in a lot of ways, making my season here for BOA Audio Season 5. You know, we can put the push pin in Afghanistan now, folks, because we've got Afghan Bob over there listening to the program. Thank you, sir, for writing in. Thank you for your service. Thank you for keeping us safe over there in Afghanistan. And you stay safe as well. Know that the entire BOA nation is riding alongside you, Afghan Bob, as you finish up your tour in Afghanistan. Thank you for writing in once again. And with that, we zip up the BOA Audio listener feedback mailbag for one more season. Coming at you once again next time around in Season 6. Hopefully we'll have just a whole slew of new emailers and some old friends emailing in for Season 6. Want to thank Jim, Christopher, Shannon, and Afghan Bob for writing in. Thank you for your support of the program and for your insights into BOA Audio. Just because we're putting the lid on the BOA Audio listener feedback mailbag doesn't mean I don't want to hear from all you folks out there. I do want to hear from you. How can you get in touch with me? That's very simple. We give out the information at the end of the program here each week, so let's do it one more time. You can email me at boaaudio@hotmail.com, or just go to binallofamerica.com, binallofamerica.com, and click the contact button. Or you can join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. And of course, we're on all the different social networking sites, Twitter, Facebook, MySpace. Befriend me, follow me, poke me. It's all good, and I definitely want to hear from all the great BOA Audio listeners, no matter how you get in touch with me. And I'll definitely set aside all the interesting, pithy, thought-provoking emails for use in the early episodes of Season 6. Up next, of course, it is the thanks portion of the program. Allow me to roll through the list of the esteemed and infamous BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Bit of a light week at BOA this past week. Only a column from Leslie looking at Leslie Keene's appearance on the Colbert Report, but we've got a couple of new pieces in the pipeline from Regan Lee as well as Rochelle Hawks, so keep an eye out at BOA for those. And I'll do a preemptive thanks right now to the BOA staff, who will surely be covering my ass as we go on hiatus between Season 5 and 6. They provide 95% of the content for the website when we go on hiatus, and I'm already very, very grateful to them for that. And as we say week in and week out here at the end of the program, if you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at Been All of America, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. I've already been talking quite a bit here at the end of the show, so I'm going to try and make this short and sweet here as we wrap things up. It's the part of the program now where I turn to you folks and ask you to help us out and make a donation to Banal of America and BOA Audio. We have amassed some amazingly large bills here as we have produced BOA Audio Season 5, not just with the web hosting, but also the phone calls and the reading materials for some of these guests. And since we're closing the book on Season 5, I'd like to close the financial books on Season 5 and get us at least on an even keel and out of the red as we prepare to start putting together Season 6. So, we turn to you and ask for your help. How can you help us out? That's simple. There's two ways to donate to Banal of America. You can go to the main website, banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, it's simple, and it is secure. But let's say you don't trust the internet and you want to donate via snail mail. Well, we can take care of you in that regard as well. Here is the address for the P.O. Box for snail mail donations. Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And let me get real specific for you on that. That is P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T, Mass. 01866. All together now, Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And if you send me a snail mail donation, please be sure to include your email address somewhere in there, so I can shoot you an email and thank you for your donation. A couple of folks have mailed in donations and not left any means to contact them, and I really want to let them know I appreciate their donation. So be sure to include an email address in the envelope there with your donation and correspondence. And as always, folks, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio, to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available and commercial free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. And now, the moment that many of you have been waiting for, it is time to announce the guest for the next edition of BOA Audio, which will, of course, be the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. In keeping with tradition, which sees our final episode of the season as the proverbial showcase of the immortals, BOA Audio closes the book on Season 5 with one of the most requested and anticipated interviews in the history of the program, as we proudly welcome a bona fide, global, esoteric superstar, the incomparable David Icke. Let me tell you a little bit about this amazing conversation. We taped it a few weeks ago, just before David Icke embarked on a 10-city, 8-country world tour that's going to be going on over the course of the next 12 months. He joins us for an over 2-hour conversation covering a myriad of topics. We're going to get into his infamous reptilian theory, as well as the furor that continues to smolder around it. We'll delve into his latest work, which sees the master conspiracist allege that the Illuminati agenda is on the verge of crumbling, and that the moon is an artificial satellite. We'll talk about his notorious Wogan interview from 1991, which saw David Icke become a household name in the UK, much to his chagrin, and find out how that changed him personally and professionally. He'll also reflect on his return to Wogan in 2006, as well as his infamous turquoise period of the early 1990s. Along the way, we'll learn what he thinks of contemporary UFO reports, the stagnation of the 9/11 truth movement, and, getting seriously deep, we'll get David Icke's opinion on what he thinks the very nature of God is. It is a truly captivating conversation with a researcher who has transcended the paranormal and achieved a level of fame on par with some of the world's biggest rock stars and entertainment icons. Taking his place among the pantheon of legends previously featured as season finale guests, David Icke joins us for the final episode of Season 5, Don't you dare miss this one, my friends, because it is an epic edition of BOA Audio. I want to tell you that the season finale with David Icke will be posted next week, but to be honest with you, in light of the big weekend coming up here in Exeter, I'm going to be pretty tied up from Thursday to Sunday, which will take a huge chunk of time out of my upcoming week. So there's a good chance you may be waiting till around September 15th or so for the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5. But don't worry, because we'll definitely have something in the middle there to keep you placated as you wait for this epic edition of the program. It's David Icke, folks, and he finally arrives on BOA Audio, helping us to close the book and say goodbye to Season 5. And on that note, we shut the door on the penultimate edition of BOA Audio Season 5. Once again, big, big, super huge thanks to Rosemary Ellen Guiley, as well as Peter Robbins, for appearing on the show. Thanks to all four folks that we featured here on the final edition of BOA Audio Listener Feedback for Season 5. And, of course, thank you, thank you, thank you to the amazing BOA Audio listeners. You guys are the best. You're the fuel that drives the machine. I could just slather you with hyperbole right now, but I'm about to lose my voice if I keep talking, so I gotta wrap things up. Thank you so much for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, when we come at you with the season finale of BOA Audio Season 5, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.